Everyone, welcome to today's Word of Mom Radio here on the Word of Mom Media Network. I'm your host, Dori DiCarlo, and you know we are here show after show, week after week, breaking those myths that mompreneurs and businesswomen, especially those of us building our businesses from home, are just dabbling in between bake sales and getting our nails done. We're not. We are smart, we are savvy, and we are sharing the wisdom of women in business and in life. And I'm excited to have today's guest here. Laura Kriska is the author of The Business of We, the proven three-step process for closing the gap between us and them in your workplace. Laura is an expert on cross-cultural relations with more than 30 years' experience in bridging gaps in diverse workplaces. She has worked with Fortune 500 companies on four continents, helping professionals build trust across us versus them differences based on nationality, ethnicity, race, religion, age, or any factor of identity. Her We Building framework provides practical and actionable insights for creating a more inclusive and productive world. Laura, I'm really excited to have you here because after everything that we have lived through for so long, this is one of the hottest topics out there in my humble opinion, and a very critical element that has been missing for quite a while. So all that being said, welcome to Word of Mom Radio.
Thank you, Dori, for that enthusiastic introduction. I am thrilled to be here. I'm thrilled to be talking about my book and to be here with you.
I have to ask you, what gave you the impetus to write this book?
Mm-hmm. I've been interested in cultural differences for a long time, and it started when I was born in Japan. My parents were missionaries there, and at the age of two, I returned to America. I grew up in a very conventional, smallish town life in Ohio, but I was always interested in Japan and other cultures. And as I got older, you know, I was exposed to more experiences. And as an adult, actually my first job, my first real professional job was working for Honda Motor Company in Tokyo, Japan. I was 22. I was completely clueless, but also really excited to be there. And from the very first day starting my work, you know, I was the only American woman working with thousands of Japanese colleagues. I made mistakes. I didn't see culture as an important day-to-day factor. It was obvious in some ways, but you know, I had lived in Japan. I had actually spent my junior year in Japan. I speak a little bit of Japanese. So I thought I knew what I was getting into. And my big mistake was realizing so much of cultural differences, they're invisible. And until you spend time getting to know another person or another culture, there's all this invisible data that goes unnoticed. And when we don't actually have that data, we fill in with stereotypes, assumptions, misunderstanding, and this leads to a lot of problems. And so later in my career, I saw all of these problems happening because of a failure to pay attention to cultural data, and especially a failure to pay attention to invisible cultural data. I was determined, having suffered myself and then, you know, figuring out some solutions for myself and then seeing, you know, how thousands of professionals could fix the problems in their own lives, I was determined to share these tools, these stories with a much broader audience. And that's why I wrote the book.
What do you see as the two biggest barriers to building trust across differences in the workplace? Because there's so much going on now.
Mm-hmm. I'd say the two biggest barriers are things that we can fix immediately and cost nothing. So the two biggest barriers are, first, the individual person's ability to honestly reflect on him, her, or themselves and their own choices. And what I mean by that is to look at the way you live, look at who you spend time with, look at who you eat lunch with, Look at who you go to when you have a problem. And if you see only other people who look like you, sound like you, pray like you, grew up like you, then you're living a kind of homogeneous life that is exclusionary, which is going to inhibit productivity in the workplace. It is going to lead to misunderstandings, and you're missing opportunities and relationships that can enrich your life in many ways. So many people I know would like to see more unity in our country, but they fail to look honestly at their own choices and the way they live currently. So that first tip or the factor is just being honest with yourself and being willing to look at your own choices. And then the second factor is having a genuine interest to want to bridge a specific gap. If you're not really interested, if you don't think it's important, I feel like it's not useful to try to force someone. I know there are many mandatory trainings in some companies. It's been my experience that unless someone is really genuinely interested, the progress you might make is marginal, and it can even be negative. You can actually make a gap worse by forcing it. So if you're honest, you know, if you can be vulnerable with yourself and really take a look at yourself, and you genuinely want to bridge a gap, I think those are the most important things. And everybody has access to those two factors. You don't have to have anybody's permission. It doesn't cost anything. And if leaders especially are willing to do this, we can make significant progress in the United States.
You know, I'm a little speechless in this just because of the fact the leaders of our country and the fact that their words matter. Mm-hmm. Their words matter. And it's so fun because I have two grandchildren. I have a 2.5-year-old grandson. I have an 8-month-old granddaughter. They're growing up in a world where a woman is our vice president. So this is what they're growing up with. Kids mm-hmm. that are under the age of 15 have grown up with a Black president. Mm-hmm. And it's the norm. This is not, I look to the day that it's no longer the first woman that, the first transgender this, all of the mm-hmm. different labeling that we keep harping mm-hmm. and putting on people, we're mm-hmm. just people. And I really look to that and the fact that the words of our leaders matter. And now we have a leader in our country that is speaking words of inclusion for everyone. And when he makes a mistake and doesn't, realizes it, admits it, says he's sorry, and goes on, you know, mm-hmm. it's very interesting to me. And so I want to ask you, what do you feel are the most common problems that well-meaning people make at work on a daily basis that perpetuates that us versus them divide?
One that I've noticed that's so simple, and I've noticed this in Europe, South America, North America, doesn't matter where I am, is just the simple act of saying another person's name correctly, making the effort. And as you know, if you're in very homogeneous environments that you're familiar with, that, you know, are environments you've been in for a long time, it's quite possible that everybody's name is easy for you. There's no question of how to pronounce it. Like in our case, I went to school with several Dories, and I was almost always one of many Lauras in my generation, in my circles. But if I look at my children and the names of the other students in their schools, there are names that I'm not sure how to pronounce. They are names that did not show up on the top 100 popular names or 200 popular names in America. And the tendency for people who are in the cultural majority, I call this being the home team, right? The home team in corporate America is pretty clear. It's middle-aged white men. Now, I'm not against middle-aged white men at all. I've married one and I created two more for the planet. But this is the dominant cultural norm, and it's what I call the home team. So if you belong to the home team, people share your type of names. You know, I've seen people default to this idea that everybody should adjust to me. And so if your name isn't part of that common name in that cultural group, you hear all kinds of people say, you know, that their names weren't said correctly. And, you know, it's a small thing for the most part. But if we just make the effort, especially those of us who identify with the home team in a particular organization, then it's just a small act of inclusion that starts to build unity in a way that we can emphasize and fortify on a daily basis.
It's so funny that you say the name. It's so true. It's so true. Look at Kamala Harris and how many people purposely mispronounce her name as a sign of disrespect. It truly is to needle in that sign of disrespect. And it's not right.
So like Ilhan Omar, for example, another example where people on the home team are purposely mispronouncing their name to show disrespect. It makes me insane.
I agree with you. You know, I went to China on business. And when I got there, I actually worked with a friend of mine who was from there. I was like, please tell me how I'm supposed to greet somebody. I'm Italian. I'm used to going up. I give you a hug. The fact that you take your business card with two hands and you look at it, you don't immediately put it in your pocket. All of the different cultural things that, you know what, I'm in somebody else's hometown. I need to behave the way I'm supposed to. I don't want to be the ugly American. I don't want to be that person that's just coming in and it's like, no, you're supposed to act the way I want you to. No. When you're in my house, hey, take your shoes off, relax. But if I'm in your house, what are your rules?
That is so great. You are a we builder. The actions you just described are what I ask people to do in the book. And we building is taking action to narrow a specific gap. So when you traveled to China, you took action. You learned how to say things. You learned about the etiquette. And these are not really hard things to learn. It's shocking to me how many people fail to do what you did. So I really admire that type of behavior, and I'm going to call you out as a we builder.
Thank you. And you know, it's one of the things that you talk about in your book as I was reading, you know, just all of the different things, the cross-cultural continuum and how things can swing positive and negative in that so easily, and the ways that we can address it, especially when you are the boss, people look to you. They're going to react the way you react. If you make a mistake and you try to push it off on someone else, if you take blame, it's an interesting thing, Laura, but let's face it, when you take blame, people always try to take the blame back. No, I did this and I didn't. It's like, no. Ultimately, the buck stops here. My fault. I must have miscommunicated something. So let's see what I can do to make sure this doesn't happen again. You know, I always try to go that route. And somebody taught me that a very long time ago, a very long time ago. And it's something that I took with me.
Very important.
What are the small gestures that we can do that bridge that gap between us and them?
Well, I would say, you know, if you have business overseas, like you did, doing things like spending a few minutes, like literally a few minutes online to learn how to say your self-introduction or just even one word in that other language is an example. But here in the United States, doing things like just noticing that people from different backgrounds are there. I think so many times people on the home team are hesitant, for example, to name race and name ethnicity. There's a lot of discomfort for white people. And so if somebody is in that space as a white person, it's important to do the work to get more comfortable. And you can do that by taking action in the privacy of your own home, by listening to podcasts, researching on the internet. There's a wonderful blog post. It was originally called 75 Things White People Can Do for Racial Social Justice. It's now expanded. I think it's more than 100 things someone can do. And this is free. It's an available resource. And if a white person is looking to gain more comfort, for example, to talk about race, to understand their role, looking on this list of 100 things, they're going to find something that is within their comfort zone and something they can actually take action to do. But it's not enough just, you know, taking small actions is not enough. It's a great starting point, but I believe that it's face-to-face interactions of increasing depth that will put us on a path toward trusting relationships. And that is going to be our salvation. That is how we get to a we culture here in America.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break and say thank you to our sponsors. and we'll be back in just a moment here on Word of Mom Radio.
Have you been curious about CBD? Maybe you heard it helps relieve stress and balance your body, but you're not sure where to start? The most important thing when you're thinking about CBD is choosing a brand you trust and feel confident in. Altwell is a high quality and effective CBD line. It's a family business with four generations in the wellness industry, and they poured all their experience, knowledge, and passion into making modern wellness attainable. Altwell uses only the highest quality, ethically grown hemp, carefully selected from Colorado farms. They triple test every product, and with every purchase, you can access a lab report so you can see exactly what you're getting. If you're new to CBD, a great place to start is with topicals like Altwell's balms and lotions to help ease achy muscles and their serums to moisturize and brighten your skin. Altwell is offering Word of Mom listeners a special discount so you can try it for yourself. All you have to do is go to altwell.com and use code ALTWELLMOM at checkout for 25% off your first purchase. Exclusions apply.
And we're back on Word of Mom Radio. We are speaking with Laura Kriska, the author of The Business of We, the proven three-step process for closing the gap between us and them in your workplace. Such a relevant, I'm serious, every time I read the title of the book, it's like such a relevant topic. And why right now is cultural empathy mattering more than ever?
I think two things. One is our workspaces and our lives are more diverse today than ever before. It's getting more diverse. And this is a good thing, I think. So the spaces we are in are have representation from people from so many different backgrounds. You know, the kind of skills and the tools that I promote 50 years ago were the tools that diplomats needed. But today, everybody is a diplomat to a degree. We all need the tools to bridge the multiple divides that inherently exist when people from different backgrounds are in working together, living together, and going to school together. So our spaces, our population demographics demand better skills and more cultural empathy, as you said. And the other reason is there is a growing awareness that laws that we put into effect over 50 years ago have not been effective in the way many of us hoped they would be. There has been negligible progress. Any objective observation of corporate America will reveal that. And there's a growing discontent with that. We used to, I don't know about you, Dori, but I grew up in a colorblind, culture silent, you know, time. I was taught, you know, I'm a middle-aged white person, inherently or, you know, somehow I was taught not to talk about race. I was uncomfortable. I just thought that was the right way to be, to treat everybody the same, treat everybody equally. And inherent in that is a privilege when you're part of that home team group. And so it's been part of my personal journey of understanding that as somebody who identifies with the home team, it's really important to get comfortable talking about race and ethnicity, learning to listen and educate myself on topics I should have been taught about in school long ago, but I wasn't.
You know, for me, I grew up, my mom was a singer, my dad owned a nightclub. We had every ethnic group. It never occurred to me that people didn't. Mm-hmm. That was the difference in our house, is mm-hmm. that I was shocked to find mm-hmm. out that people had never had, you know, Spanish food or mm-hmm. Ethiopian food or different mm-hmm. things like that. I actually had somebody work at my house one time who was a highly skilled carpenter, he and his nephew. And I told the kids, I said, let them know we're having brunch if they'd like to come up and eat. And they came up and he took his plate and went to sit outside. And I was like, no, sit down. And this man sat down and he was 60 or 70 year old black man. And he just sat there looking at me and I was like, is everything okay? He said, you're the first white woman who ever invited me to their table. And my kids were like, huh? Mm-hmm. 'Cause they just never understood that there are still people in this world where you're expected to go to the back door. Mm-hmm. You know, you can sit outside, I'll feed you, but you can't sit with me. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, I
versus them, that yeah. type of here.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you were saying earlier, look at who you sit with when you're eating. You know, it's mm-hmm. so funny. When I think back to high school, I was friends with everybody. I never had one group of friends. I was with the jocks. I was with the, you know, outcasts. I was with the hippie chicks. I was with the really studious people. I just liked people, you know, so I never wanted to just be in one place. It's the same reason when I talked to my children when they were younger. I talked to them about the person they would find, never the guy or the girl, the man or the woman, the person, because I wanted them to look at people as people and not just identify and genderfy people because of the expectations that those names and roles and things like that put on you. So, you know, I want to ask you, how can we start using the we building concept that you are bringing forth to challenge our own thinking?
The first thing to do is just to be aware that cultural differences can take form in many ways, just as you are describing, Dori. It can be about gender, gender orientation, race, ethnicity, you know, so when people think about cultural differences, they often think, oh, international, and that is a good example, but it's much more than that. So that's the first step. The second step is to look inward. And so I have a tool in my book called this Us Versus Them Self-Assessment. It's 10 simple questions, yes or no questions, that ask the person to measure your level of firsthand experience with a target culture or a target person. A culture can be as small as one person, one other human, or an entire, you know, country. So the second step of looking inward requires a person, one of your listeners, you know, to think, huh, here's a, what's a culture that's relevant to my life? And, you know, measure yourself in relation to that other culture. And then you get a score. It's much like stepping on a scale. You know, you get a number. In this case, the higher the number, the better. If you get a high number, it means that you're well integrated. You've had a lot of face-to-face interactions with this target culture that you have picked. But if your score is low, it means you need to spend more time and effort to increase the number of interactions you have. Now, I just want to be very clear. The us versus them self-assessment is one way to measure your level of integration. It's a tool I have used successfully with thousands of people on four continents, but it's not the only way to measure. And then the third step is taking some action. So if you have a low score, if you've answered no to many of the questions, any of those no answers can become an action point. You can start researching that other cultural group online. You can listen to a podcast about that cultural group. You can pick up a book, watch a documentary. There's so many simple, small efforts, things that take maybe 10 minutes. And that starts the process of increasing our level of understanding. Eventually, it's important to engage in face-to-face interactions, but that can, you know, you can work up to that. And certainly while many of us are still being careful and working from home, it's a perfect time to invest a little bit of time in understanding another cultural group that is relevant to your life.
As we're wrapping up, I wanted to talk, I wrote a bunch of notes as I was reading, and the positive and negative feedbacks, because you have constructive criticism and then you have the negative. And it's amazing how easily those can twist, you know, in trying to make people aware. So how can we, as parents, help with our kids and give them the constructive information that doesn't become an accusatory, you're not doing this, as opposed to how we can do it better?
That's such a big question. It's a great question. It's something I struggle with as a parent. You know, I want to give constructive criticism and reminding my children of the greater good, the greater issue at hand. You know, maybe it's the well-being of our family. Maybe it's the well-being of our church community. You know, whatever it happens to be, connecting what we're talking about to a larger, greater good is one way that I do it.
Great way. It really is. As we are starting to wrap this up, Laura, please let everyone know how they can reach you. And then what would you like to leave our listeners with?
Oh, wow. Well, people can reach me at my website. It's lauracriska.com, and my name is spelled LauraKris, like Spain, K-A. I always spell it out that way, lauracriska.com. And I'm on many social media platforms, especially LinkedIn. The takeaway I want to say is that us versus them self-assessment is free and available to anyone who wants it. It's a tool that I've developed over many years. It's on my website. Anybody can download it. It's a tool that I hope will be used frequently and often by many people in many different ways. It took me years to develop that. As I said, it's not the only way to measure, but it's one quick way for people to understand how well integrated they are. So I invite everyone to go to my website, download the us versus them self-assessment, and take your measurement in relation to another cultural group that's important to you.
What a great way to wrap this up. Laura, I am going to invite you back because this is not, it's too big for one show. I know you're going to be sharing more and more. So please come back because now more than ever, we have to stop being us and them.
Mm-hmm. Actually, if you don't mind, I'd like to say one more thing, which is in response to what you just said, Dori, we don't need any more us and them. It is my life's mission to create a we building revolution. And I cannot do it by myself. I need your help. I need your listeners' help. I need everybody to help me do this. I can't do it alone.
I am on board. I love the idea of we. I truly do. Because when we work together, we make things happen. It's the truth. And history has proved it. And we can continue to prove it. So Laura, thank you for the wonderful book you've written, the information that you are sharing. And again, would love to have you back. To all of our listeners, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to Altwell.com, our fabulous sponsor. And we're going to close out with our theme song from Smith Sisters Bluegrass. So till next time, this is Dori DiCarlo saying go out and create a marvelous you. Bye for now.
She is sure. She is strong. She is true.